This is a share I gave on Shabbos between Minchah and Maariv. Not everybody was there, so I just thought I'd make use of it. We called it waterworks and workarounds for Shemitah. And what we're going to eventually get to is the issue of hydroponics and Shemitah. But before we get there, we have a little bit of ground to cover. So let's do that now. There's two major pillars upon which the question of hydroponics really rests. One of them is called Din Bayit. The other one is called Atid She'eino Nakuv. We have to establish what the halakha is for both of these things. Okay? So the first is called Din Bayit, which is basically saying, what happens if you create a structure outside and put it on top of the plants that you're growing? Okay? So basically, you know, you have a field, then you just put a roof with, let's say, walls over the field. The plants are still on the ground. They still get watered. They may even get some sun, but not as much because there's a house on top. This is called Din Bayit. What's the halakha about this? Does anybody know what the halakha is for anything, for any of the other mitzvot tatliyot ba'aretz? If you put a roof over your plants, what's the din with regards to Trumat and Masot? Let's say you have you happen to have an olive tree inside your house, let's say. So what's the halakha with that? Anybody know?
Isn't it if it's still connected to the ground, it's the same?
We're talking about a case where it's still connected to the ground, but there's a roof on top of it. So, the Yerushalmi and Orla tells us about two different halachot, and then it leaves a third halacha, b'safek. Rav Yochanan said in the name of Rav Yane, a tree that was planted inside a house is subject to Orla, but exempt from Trumot and Maasrot. So this tree, this olive tree or a lemon tree or an apple tree or whatever tree you have that you're growing inside your house, in fact, you're obligated to wait 3 years for it to be finished with Orla, but with regards to Trumot and Maasrot, you don't have to do it. So in theory, if you have an apple tree in your house, right, you could, you know, go over to your apple tree, pick a few apples, walk right to your kitchen, drop them into an apple pie. You don't have to take Trumot and Maasrot at all. You're good. No trouble at all. Why is this? Because about Trumot and Maasrot, it says, you shall surely tithe all the increase of your seed, that which the field brings forth, the sadeh. All right? It has to come from the field in order to be chayav in Trumot and Maasrot. That's the operating word over here. And because anything that's in a house is not considered in a field, therefore it won't be chayav in Trumot and Maasrot. Now, the Gemara in Orla turns its attention to the Shemitah. With respect to the seventh year, it must be asked, it says, about the seventh year, it says both. It says, that then shall the land keep a Sabbath for the Lord, v'shaftar et Shabbat la'Hashem. But it also says, you shall neither sow your field nor prune your vineyard. Sa'adcha lo tizmor, sa'adcha lo tizra, v'karmecha lo tizmor. So on the one hand, with regards to Shemitah, it's talked about as aretz, but on the other hand, it's also talked about as regards sadeh. Now, which one takes the primacy? If it's aretz, then it would apply even if it was under a house, because it's still considered in the aretz. But if it's mainly sadeh, then it doesn't apply because once it's in your house, it's no longer a sadeh. And that's how the Yerushalmi in Orla leaves it. We know that of all the masechtot in Zraim, only one of them gets a Bavli Gemara. Which one gets a Bavli Gemara? Only one. Right? Only Brachot. Brachot is the only one, exactly. Brachot is the only one. The other ones only get, if they get any treatment at all, it's only in the Yerushalmi. So there's no Bavli Orla. And the Yerushalmi has no conclusion to this question. Amazing. No conclusion to this question. What is the halakha about a plant that grows inside your house with regards to Shemitah? No conclusion. So the Peat HaShulchan looks at this and says, oh, well, if there's no conclusion, then that means that it's a suffix. Now, on a Daraita level, if you have a suffix, what's the halakha? Suffix Daraita, L'chumrah. So we would be machmir. We would treat it as aretz, and we'd have to be machmir. But the Pe'at HaShulchan points out that everybody agrees that Shemitah nowadays, even in Israel, is only Midrabanan. There are lots of conditions. It's not a time to get into it, but there's lots of conditions that would have to be met in order to make it Daraita. But Shemitah right now is only Derabanan. Given that it's only Derabanan, Pe'at HaShulchan says it only seems reasonable that on this question, we can be Mekel, because it's a Safek on a Derabanan. Seems reasonable, no? What do we all think about this argument?
Sounds reasonable.
Sounds reasonable. So the Chazon Ish says, sounds reasonable, but really it's not. And he gives two arguments for why it's not. Number one, he says, what's the Pe'at HaShulchan saying? Pe'at HaShulchan is saying that, oh, since it's a Safek and Shemitah is only Darabanan, we can be Mekel. But the Chazon Ish says, no, that's a funny argument to make. Why? Because Shemitah is not Darabanan itself. Shemitah is Daraita. The Torah has Shemitah. It's very Daraita. It just happens to be that the law doesn't apply to Daraita nowadays. But the law does apply to Darabanan. The rabbis wanted to make sure that we kept up with Shemitah so that it wouldn't be too much of a shock when we got it back. So the Chazon Ish says, we only say Safek Darabanan the Kula when the din itself is Darabanan, was an invention of the rabbis, or a gzera, something to prevent us from doing something else. But here, the rabbis simply instituted that we're going to be observant of Shemitah even when it doesn't apply midaraita. But how would they have instituted that? Surely they instituted it in the same way that it works daraita. The din darabanan of Shemitah works the same way as it works daraita. Now, again, the question of bayit with regards to Shemitah daraita, how would we rule? If Shemitah were daraita nowadays, how would we surely rule? If we didn't know about bayit, what would we say? Daraita, chumra or kula?
Chumra.
So we'd say on a daraita level, we'd have to rule that the suffix says that we have to be careful, right? Well, when the rabbis instituted Shemitah darabanan, they didn't get rid of that. They just said everything that applies daraita applies darabanan. Why would they say any different? So there's no reason to say that we should be Mekel just because nowadays Shemitah is Darabanan. That's argument number one. Argument number two, the Chazon Ish makes, is that, you know, I looked at that Yerushalmi and I said, well, you know, it seems like the Yerushalmi is not sure about it. Most likely, there's a Darabanan Isser about it. If we're not sure on a Daraita level about what it should be, then probably the rabbis made some kind of Zera about it. It's not on the books. There's nothing in the Yerushalmi. There's nothing anywhere. But I have a feeling that there's probably an Isser Darabanan involved over here. And that Isser Darabanan would apply even when Shemitah itself is Darabanan. So the Chazon Ish rejects the Pe'at HaShulchan. And this has been generally observed like this. People are not Mekel on the Pe'at HaShulchan's point on its own. In other words, having a roof over the plant is not enough to make it not subject to Shemitah. Okay? That's stage one. Now we get to stage two. Atzitz she'enu nakuf. No, what's an atzitz she'enu nakuf? Yo, you with us? What's an atzitz she'enu nakuf? So, but what's an atzitz in general? What's an atzitz, Rabbi?
Like the container, no?
It's a pot. It's a potted plant. Nakuv means a hole, right? Mikavim, mikavim. So if it's atzitz nakuv, then it means it's a pot with holes on the bottom, right? And if it's an atzitz she'eno nakuv, then it's a pot without holes on the bottom. Now, why does a person put holes in the bottom of the plant, of a pot, a potted plant?
So the water can drain out.
Right, so for two possible reasons. The main reason is so that the water will drain out. And the other reason is that it's a nice way, if you don't put the potted plant in your garden, it's connected to the garden. It also gets nourished through the garden. You could actually, you know, theoretically, water the garden and it will get up through the potted plant. I'm not a gardener. I don't know if it works like that. But in theory, it means that as long as there are holes on the bottom of the potted plant, it's still connected to the ground. This has tremendous halachic significance in almost all areas of halacha. The Gemara in Shabbos talks about what about on Shabbat itself? It says, the Mishnah says, "Atolesh me'atzitz nakuv chayav." If you take a leaf off of a potted plant, if it has holes on the bottom, then the potted plant is considered attached to the ground, and you're chayev midaraita for being tolesh. If it's eno nakuv, if it doesn't have holes on the bottom, then you're patur. What does patur mean with regards to Shabbat? Patur is always patur aval asur, meaning there's an isur derabanan. What we're saying over here is that the rabbi said, atzitz she'eino nakuv, you're not going to be chayev midoraita. It's considered disconnected from the ground when there's no hole in the bottom of the pot. But the rabbis made exera, and they said, we're going to treat it as if it is the same as an atzitz nakuv. Why? It's very hard to tell when an atzitz is nakuv or not nakuv, right? You have to pick it up in order to see. So if you see somebody pulling a leaf off of a potted plant, what are you going to think is going on?
It's not nakuv.
Well, I mean, if all you saw was them doing that, then you might think that that person is violating Shabbat, or you might think that it's okay to do that in any potted plant. So the rabbi said, no, we're not going to distinguish a potted plant, whether or not it has holes, it'll be asur. However, we acknowledge that it's not asur on a Torah level. Similarly, the Rambam writes about kilayim. Kilayim in a potted plant. This past year, I think both Tu B'Shvat, my company sent us these wooden boxes with soil in them and a bunch of seeds to put in there. Now, I mean, we have a strict rule in my house. We don't allow potted plants in the house, so he was worried that they attract bugs. So there was never any chance that we were going to do anything with it. But one of my coworkers called me up and said, you know, is there an issue of kilayim here? We're going to be putting the seeds right next to each other. They're different species. So I said, well, what kind of species are they? I didn't really look. And we looked it up and we saw what the species there were. And there indeed was a problem of kilayim. You're not allowed to plant different species of certain kinds of plants inside of a potted plant together because it's too close to each other. So Rambam says, Echad hazorea ba'aretz o ba'atzitz nakuv. The Rambam says, when it's atzitz nakuv, it's going to be kilayim on a doraita level. When it's atzitz she'eino nakuv, it's only kilayim on a derabanan level. But what do we see? We see that in both places, the rabbis made a gzera about atzitz she'eino nakuv. So now we turn our attention once again to the question of Shemitah. Let's say I have a potted plant on my mirpeset, and I want to water it and plant in it, whatever. And it's got no holes on the bottom. Am I permitted to do that during Shemitah? What do you think? So based on what we've seen so far, you would expect that the answer is no. The rabbi said that an atzitz nakuv is treated the same way as an atzitz she'eino nakuv. And we say that it's aser midrabanan. And in fact, that's how Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach starts out. He quotes the Shut Nechpa Pekesef, which is Rav Yonah Navon, who says, yeah, it's asur to zoreya and atzit she'eino nakuv in Shvi'it. You're not allowed to plant in a potted plant during Shemitah. And Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach says, it seems that the obvious reason for this is because the rabbis always made a gzera on atzit she'eino nakuv atu atzit nakuv. They're worried about that. But Rav Shlomo Zalman says, but that's not true. They didn't always make that gzera. For example, with regards to orla, there is no such gzera. If you plant in a potted plant that has holes on the bottom, then the food that you put in there, the fruit that you plant in there, is potentially subject to orla. But if it's a potted plant with no holes on the bottom, then most of the Rishonim assume that it's not subject to orla. Mihai. You see that not in every case do the rabbis make such a gzera. And Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach says, you can't be sure that they always make a gzera. So how can you tell? So he wants to argue that it could be that the reason that they don't make a gzera by Orla is because Shermot and Masrot and Shabbat, that applies how often? All the time. It applies all the time. However, Orla only applies, depending on your tree, it only applies for the first 3 years that you own the tree. After that, it stops applying. So the rabbis maybe thought that there was no reason to make such a gzera. Similarly, Shemitah happens only once every 7 years. So maybe the rabbis thought that it wasn't worth it to make such a gzeira. And so, Rosham Zalman Arbach says, Yesh al mei smoch, to say that if it's a tzitz she'enu nakuv, we don't have to be concerned. Who else says this? So the Chazon Ish, this is a major point by the Chazon Ish. This is where everything revolves around. Everything revolves around this comment by the Chazon Ish. He says, when a pot is indoors, until now we've been talking about pots that are outdoors. When a pot is indoors, even if you say that planting indoors is forbidden by rabbinic law, which is what he says, it can be argued that with respect to an atzit she'eino nakuv, the sages did not issue a decree. For even planting it outdoors is forbidden only rabbinically. Given that the Peah HaShulchan has already ruled leniently, even with respect to planting indoors in a perforated pot, one who is lenient about an atzit she'eino nakuv indoors has what to rely on. So what did the Chazon Ish say? On the face of it, what the Chazon Ish said is, look, we already have a Peah HaShulchan, which I'm not willing to rely on, but other people are. It's on the books. The Peah HaShulchan says that as long as you plant indoors, there's no problem. He says, I will take that, combine it with the rule that atzit she'eino nakuv we're also not sure about, and take these two questionable halachot, put them together and say, at least if you do it this way, you have upon whom to rely. If you plant inside an atzit she'eino nakuv indoors, then it's permitted. It's permitted to do that. Now, this is pretty amazing because the Chazon Ish basically resuscitated an opinion that he had rejected and combined it with another opinion that would make in order to create a big kula. How did he do this? You know, is this a normal thing to do? So one way to say it is that he's really just taking two derabbanans and putting them together, right? Even he acknowledges that planting in a house is most likely, at worst, a din derabanan, plus shmita's derabanan, plus you're talking about atzit she'eino nakuv, that is also, at worst, derabanan. So you put that all together, and maybe that makes it more comfortable. Rav Lichtenstein argued that no. He said, no, what's happening over here, actually, is that the Chazon Ish is covering all his bases. There's a suffix in the Yerushalmi and Orla. Is planting indoors during Shemitah mutter or not? Do we see Shemitah as being a law that applies to the Sadeh or a law that applies to the Aretz? If it's the Aretz, then it applies. If it's the Sadeh, it doesn't apply. Then the Chazon Ish said, so I'm going to be machmir on this, the Chazon Ish says, because we don't know what the answer is, and we have to be machmir, because it's really a din d'oraita that gets converted to a d'orabanan. But, Lichtenstein says, if you take an atzit she'eino nakuv, that's for sure not sadeh. So if you take an atzit she'eino nakuv, that's definitely not sadeh. You put it inside the house where there was a suffix, whether it's aretz or sadeh, then you really have all your bases covered. It's definitely not sadeh anymore. And that's why it's permitted. That's what Lichtenstein argued. Okay, so now we've gone part of the way. And we're able to now introduce the phenomenon of matzah menutak. Matzah menutak is basically the hothouses that were developed in Israel to get around Shemitah. Okay? So one of the major poskim that was asked about this is the Shut Shevet HaLevi or Vosner, or Shmuel Levi Vosner, who passed away a few years ago. And he, I'm going to skip the long tshuva and just jump to the end and get to the conditions under which he was willing to be makil. These are the conditions under which he said, I'm willing to say that if you cover all of these conditions, I will, you know, be a signatory on your produce, that it's okay to use and eat during Shemitah. What are the conditions? Number one, Zriya b'toch bayit. Has to be indoors. Clear. Shvit b'zman hazeh. He says, my tshuva is only binding until Shemitah becomes d'oraita again. As long as it's derabanan b'zman hazeh, I'm willing to be makel. Number three, atzit she'eino nakuv. What we've been talking about. So it's atzit she'eino nakuv and the bayit, but he wants more than that. Number four, hasafek shel chevel ha'aretz zeh im nitkadesh b'chla kedusha shnia. It depends where in Israel it's being done. It has to be in an area where we're not sure if it was nitkadesh, What area is he talking about? He's talking about Gush Katif. That's what he's talking about. This is the area about which he was discussing. He was writing this tshuva to those farmers, to the people in Gush Katif. So it has to be in an area that is not totally Eretz Yisrael proper. Number five, Mashi Tzatem de Hamalachot Yasu Aide Goyim. You have to get non-Jews to do the work. Okay, so it's one thing to have the field be owned by a Jew and then have it be worked. You're not allowed to have a non-Jew work in a Jewish field in order to obviate Shemitah. But he said, but if you combine everything plus you have non-Jews doing the malacha, then that's better. And then he says, one more thing he says, I'd like it, it would be even better if you could sell the pots in which the produce is being put. Let me just describe. Matzah menutak basically is you take like these bathtub size pots, right? Even bigger than bathtubs that are, you know, completely covered on the bottom and have to be made out of special materials that are non-porous. And then you put the plants inside with soil, okay? Proper soil. You treat them as basically in earth. And then you have to make sure that the plants don't overflow. They don't go over the side because it can't be over the ground. Okay? So he says, what would be even better is if you sell the pots themselves to non-Jews. And he said, I'm not concerned about Heter Mechira here because you're not selling any land. It's not a fake sale. And you're not worried about Lot Hanem of selling land to non-Jews. It's a kind of Heter Mechira, but it's a good one because you're not selling land. You're only selling the plants, and you become basically shutzfim with these non-Jews in the business, in the industry. But in the end, he says, I am willing to be a signatory on this. If if others agree with me, then I'm okay with it. You can even quote it. However, he says, but I'll tell you what, I'm not happy about it. Not happy about it. Why am I not happy about it? He says, I'm willing to be Mekel, but Libi, he says, I'm not sure if this is really what the Chazal would have wanted. I don't think it's necessarily appropriate that all this work should be done to create an entire industry under which we're going to be producing fresh fruit and vegetables during the year of Shemitah, right? It says we're creating a whole ta'asiyah to subvert the entire principle of Shemitah. Now, what do you guys think? What about this argument? Appeals to you or doesn't appeal to you?
I think it's practical. It's like puzbul, okay? You have a situation in Israel. You have all those settlement or whatever. That's actually what they do for their living.
Right.
So what will they do?
Right. I mean, that's one of the questions. You know, well, what's the alternative? How are we going to get food? How are these people going to have a parnasa? But what's the response? What's he going to respond to you if you say this? What would he respond?
What would he respond?
Yeah.
I know. It seems to me like when I'm telling my kids, do whatever you want, but actually I don't want to let them do that or something like that.
Right. And why do you not want? Because there's a spirit of the law, right? There's a spirit of it. But okay, even if technically it's okay, mm-hmm, there's something going on here that's not okay. And there are actually two concerns that he has. One of them he explicitly says, and the other one I think is obvious. One that he explicitly says is that he's concerned that if we do it this way, then what's going to happen to Shemitah? Basically, every farmer is going to go out and do it this way, and everybody's going to forget about Shemitah. Just going to forget about it. Forget that it even exists. We're not going to learn the halachot. We're not going to follow the halachot. And in the shiur on Shabbat, somebody mentioned that this was the rationale that somebody once gave, one of their rabbim, I forget where, gave why they should not put up an eruv in a certain town. He said, because everybody's going to forget about the malacha of hotza'ah, which is totally true.
That is true. As an Israeli, totally I must true. Say.
Nobody knows. Nobody who grew up with an Eruv, which is most people, knows anything about Hotzah. Okay? When I went, I've only been in one place in my life, I think, that I can remember, where there was a question about whether or not I could carry because there was no Eruv. That was when I was in Kansas City at my brother-in-law's wedding. That was it. That's the only time I've ever been in a place where I wasn't sure if there was an Eruv. And so I had to look up all the halachot and how do I create an Eruv and what can I do? What can I do when I'm outside the Eruv? You know, it's hard to figure these things out. And that's exactly what would happen to Shemitah, he claims. And there are those who also say the same thing, by the way, about the you know the coming generation of synthetic meat or lab cultured meat. What's going to happen to Shechita? Shechita is going to be irrelevant. All the meat's going to come from one cow that was shechted, you know, 50 years ago, and we just keep getting the DNA from that cow. And then goodbye, Shechita. Goodbye, Shechita. So who knows?
That's a value by itself.
Right? So, I mean, it's a common question. Like, you know, if you could make every single food kosher, would you? Or is it good to have non-kosher food?
Mm-hmm.
So that's one argument. The other argument is, no, but Ravit, what do you mean, what are the farmers going to do? That's the whole point of Shemitah. Emunah. The whole point of Shemitah is we say we don't have ownership of the land. And so we take our hands off. And we say the world will continue spinning. And Hashem will do whatever it takes in order to make sure that we continue to have food and we just continue to have a parnasa. That's the whole point. Aren't we rejecting that aspect of Emunah if we you know just basically continue to grow food the entirety of Shemitah? So that's a philosophical argument against it. But I think there is a response to that. And it's a very interesting response. Rav Rimon, in the beginning of his Sefer, he lists a bunch of the rationales for Shemitah. And one of the rationales that he mentions is the often maligned rationale of the Rambam. The Rambam in his Mor Nevuchim gives an explanation and a reason for Shemitah. Anybody know what it is? So the Rambam writes that the reason for Shemitah is we need to take it easy on the land. Hashem gave us a land, and if we work it every year, year in, year out, we thresh and plant and harvest, thresh and plant and harvest, eventually we're going to ruin the land. And so that's the reason why we're not supposed to do anything during Shemitah, because we have to be careful with the land. A lot of people say, okay, you know, it makes sense on a certain level. But on the other hand, the Torah implies that we actually get exiled from Israel because we don't keep Shemitah. It seems a little harsh for something which is just about, you know, making sure that the land, you know, making sure to take care of the land. It seems a little harsh, doesn't it? I mean, it's not exactly a moral problem if we decide that we're going to keep threshing the land and working it. Why is it such a harsh punishment for Shemitah, which according to the Rambam is some kind of economic law or agricultural law? So I think it's Rav Rimon. It's not Rav Rimon. I heard it somewhere. So they say, no, we're misunderstanding the Rambam. The Rambam isn't saying, okay, for our good, we need to take care of the land. And Hashem gave us a law that's for our good so that we take care of the land so that, you know, we make sure that it stays sustainable. No. Hashem says, this is my land. This is my beautiful piece of property, and I'm letting you dwell on it. Don't ruin it. Take care of it. Because if you don't take care of it, that's my land that you're ruining. You're being disrespectful to a gift that I gave you. That's why things are so harsh. Because we're basically spitting in Hashem's face. We're saying, we're going to take this land that you gave us, take this gift that you gave us, and use it however we want and until it's used up. And we don't care that, you know, you wanted it to be taken care of. Now, if that's the reason for Shemitah, if the Rambam is right, that's the reason for Shemitah, then is there really a philosophical problem with using matzah menutach, with continuing to come up with a way to have agricultural produce during Shemitah if we don't do it in the land?
No, it would seem that would solve the problem.
Yeah. So from that perspective, from the Rambam's perspective, there's no philosophical problem at all with doing exactly this, with creating an industry that doesn't damage the land. Okay? All right. One other point before we get to hydroponics. One other major posek that weighed in on this, Rav Yitzchak Yaakov Weiss, Dayan Weiss, the Minchas Yitzchak, so it's hard to read the tshuva exactly who's talking in the tshuva, but basically the argument is made. One of the arguments is made that when the Chazon Ish was Mako for an Atzid Sheino Nakuv in house, right? He was only Mako because he believed that the principle of the Din Bayit, of the idea that you're planting inside, is that that is a bad way to plant and harvest. It doesn't work well. Planting indoors is an inefficient way of harvesting and planting. And that's why it's mutter. That's why the Mishnah in Orla and the Yerushalmi in Orla has the argument that it should be mutter. But if you end up making an entire, you know, industry out of using indoor hothouses, then that becomes like a sadeh. The hothouse becomes like a sadeh because it's just as efficient, if not more, than a field itself. In other words, built into the heta of bayit was that it's an inefficient way of doing it. That's the house is detrimental to the growth. But if the house is actually not detrimental to the growth, then that maybe the Chazon Ish would not have been matir in that case. For Shlomo Zalman Auerbach rejects this. He says no, because the fact is that even if you accept that argument, that the point of din bayit is that it should be detrimental, he says in essence a house is always detrimental. It's just because we came up with technology to make it work, that's why it works so well. But naturally speaking, putting a roof over a tree is going to make it grow worse. So the fact that we came up with technology to make it better, that's not relevant to the halakha. The halakha goes according to the way things work naturally. When you put a house over a tree, it doesn't grow as well. Okay, fine. So that's with regards to chamamot. Generally speaking, we are mekel. With many of these conditions. Now we get to gedul b'mayim. What about hydroponics? What happens if you're not growing inside of soil, but you're growing inside of water? Now, how does that work? There are many kinds of hydroponics. Generally speaking, the principle is that you take, you know, plants, you take the small plants, they don't really do it with trees, but you take small plants and you put it into a medium which is inert, which doesn't provide any growth and is completely, basically sterile. It could be concrete, it could be sand, it could be plastic, it could be anything that you do it, it could be metal, just so that it has a structure and holds up the plant. And then at the bottom, it's just water, only water, okay? Now, why would anybody do this? So there are a few reasons. Number one, hydroponically grown produce uses, I think, 95% less water than regular fields. Because when you water a field, you have to water it such that, you know, all the soil is watered, right? It gets absorbed into the soil. Here, all the water is used for the plant. It's just sitting in the water. Number two, you bugs. Can put whatever you want. What's that, y'all?
Number two is bugs.
Bugs, that's number two. Number two is bugs. When you have soil, you really can't keep track of the bugs. The bugs live in the soil, they come out of the soil. When you're outdoors, bugs can come from everywhere. When you're in water, so you can keep the water clean, and the plants aren't connected to each other, so the bugs don't jump from one to the other, and there's no soil for them to travel through. So yes, bugs is a major reason why people do hydroponics. And then, other than that, it's when you're in control of the environment, you can do what you want to the plants. You can provide them with the nourishment that they need in a much more direct way. There is something new called aeroponics, which is when they suspend the plant actually in the air and then just spray, right? It doesn't actually have to sit. They just spray at the right amount of intervals. They spray it with water so that it grows like that. Pretty amazing. But I think the aeroponics is not as efficient as hydroponics. Now, what's the halakha there? Because here what you're talking about is that it's not even growing in any soil. So it's not at all connected to the karka. So Rav Ovadia Yosef, in a tshuva that's actually mostly centered on the question of what bracha you make of these things, that's his main concern over there. But in the course of that conversation, he mentions, his position is that you make a shahakol, but in the course of that conversation, he mentions, Hen emet, ki agon Rabbi Yonah Navon, reshut nechpa b'kesef, pasak she'asur lizra b'shvit, b'toch tzuchit mayim imat afar. He thinks that you're not allowed to plant inside of a tzluchit mayim that has a little bit of afar in it, because he thinks it's basically like an atzit sheino nakuv. It's basically like a plant. But he says, but Rav Avada says, but we're talking about where it's completely just submerged only in water. And you provide some nutrition in the water, but it's only water. He says, if it's only water, he thinks everybody will agree, mutar li zra b'ofen kazeh b'shvi'it. And Rav Avadya basically is makel all the way. He quotes a few other authorities during his generation, Rabbi Yechiel Michal Tupachinsky, and others who say that as long as it's only water, completely mutar. Completely mutar, you don't have to worry about anything. So that was hydroponics. Rav Binyamin Zilber, he mentions one shita that is absolutely machmer. Rav Maril Diskin, Rav Shulev Diskin wrote about this, and he thinks that planting it in water is completely asur. And others say that in some circumstances it's asur, and other circumstances it's mutar. He says, for example, sometimes they plant the seeds and then until its growth grows a little bit, and they put it in water for a few months, so that it grows for a few months in the hydroponics, and then they take it out and they put it in the ground to grow the rest of the way. So Rav Zilber says, Yesh Lachmir, because if eventually you're going to be planting it into the ground, then you should be machmir even when it's in the hydroponics. This is a pretty amazing argument. But he says, you know, the basis for this argument is, you know, Charisha is also usur during Shemitah. Even though Charisha, you're not planting anything. You're just preparing for the planting. So he wants to argue that this is kind of like preparing for the planting. So you can't even put it in the water during Shemitah if you're going to put it in the ground even after Shemitah. But as I said, there are many poskim who are makel all the way, like Rabbi Yosef, Yeshav Mitzmoch. Certainly if you do it indoors, in a kind of atzichen on a kuv filled with water, then there's a lot of room to be makel in that way. And many places do exactly that. All right. I wish everybody a shkayach and a good night.